Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star and then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Kate, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Workshop, Progress in the Treatment of Follicular Lymphoma. And today's program is a collaborative effort between the Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care. And this has been a collaboration that has been going on for the past 10 years and offering programs that are lymphoma-related. And so this is a wonderful program today. And it's a collaboration between Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care and a number of other cancer organizations. And it's because of that collaboration and your interest in the topic that we have so many of you on the call today. Now, we have over 738 participants on the call today, so that's really a very large call. I think this is a record for this particular topic. And we have you're from all over the United States, from all different parts of the United States. And we also have international participants from Canada, Italy, Ireland, Mexico, the United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So you're really from all over the world as well. It's a bit of a global call. Now, today's program is supported by unrestricted educational grants to Lymphoma Research Foundation from Genentech Biooncology, Biogen IDEC, and Spectrum Pharmaceuticals. And I really want to thank them for their support of this program, and I also particularly want to thank the Lymphoma Research Foundation for really being the architect of today's program and really helping to make this possible. Now, I'd like to turn your attention to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials, there's information about our speakers. There also is information about all of our collaborating organizations as a resource for all of you. And there also is an evaluation form. I would ask you to take a moment at the end of the program today and complete the evaluation form. When you think about it, you are the best people to tell us the topics you'd like us to offer. Indeed, today's topic is one that many of you have asked us to offer a workshop on. You've asked both the Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care, and here we are offering this workshop. So please do let us know what you'd like us to do. We're planning many workshops, and your feedback is really essential to us. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. John Leonard. Dr. Leonard is the Richard T. Silver Distinguished Professor of Hematology and Medical Oncology. He's Professor of Medicine at Weill Cornell Medical College. He's Clinical Director at New York Cornell's Center for Lymphoma and Myeloma, and he's Chief Lymphoma Myeloma Service Associate Director for Clinical Research, Weill Cornell Cancer Center. As you can see, Dr. Leonard wears many hats, and he's going to discuss with you today an overview of follicular lymphoma, treatment options for newly diagnosed, and the importance of communicating with your healthcare team. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Leonard.
Thank you very much, Carolyn, and I'd like to also thank Cancer Care and the Lymphoma Research Foundation for your support of this program, as well as all you do for patients dealing with lymphoma and other cancers. So I'm going to start with a little bit of an overview of follicular lymphoma. I'm sure many people in this audience are familiar with the topic, but others are perhaps less familiar. And so really, lymphomas are tumors of the lymph tissue, which are a collection of over 60 different cancers of the lymph system. And one of the things that we talk about in cancer treatment is personalized therapy, the idea of figuring out how patients differ and therefore how their treatments should differ. And in fact, lymphoma is really a cutting-edge area because for many years, lymphomas have been divided into many, many different groups, leading us to be able to provide better information as to the prognosis and best treatment for groups of patients. On the flip side, that makes it very complicated because there are so many different types to wade through, and so people diagnosed with lymphoma have to sort through which type they're dealing with. So most lymphomas fit the category of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and most non-Hodgkin's lymphoma patients have B-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So across the board, about 80% of people with lymphoma, 80 to 90%, have B-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Now, that may sound like a very precise name, but there are over 40 types of B-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And they're very broadly categorized into three main groups. one being the indolent group of lymphomas, the second being aggressive group of lymphomas, and the third group, for lack of a better term, being kind of the other group of lymphomas, which are less common lymphomas, some of which are like the indolent or like the aggressive, some of which have their own distinct features. So follicular lymphoma is a B-cell lymphoma, and it is the second most common form of lymphoma, the most common form of indolent lymphoma. And so the term indolent in some ways has good and bad things to it. The good parts about indolent lymphomas, and follicular in particular, is that they tend to be slow-growing lymphomas. And so they are lymphomas that appear typically pretty slowly over the time, slowly enlarging lymph nodes in most cases. Typically, patients are diagnosed by feeling a swollen lymph gland, typically in the neck, under the arms, and the groin, but there may be a swollen lymph node elsewhere in the body, or the lymphoma may show itself by some symptoms, some pain, some swelling, some laboratory abnormalities, or just being found incidentally on a physical examination, perhaps done for other purposes. And so patients end up getting a biopsy, and that's the crucial thing in lymphoma, is that determine what specific type of lymphoma one is dealing with. And follicular lymphoma, again, is the second most common type, the most common of the indolent type of lymphomas. There are several grades of follicular lymphomas, and the grading refers to the percentages of various small and large cells and the patterns of the cells. But for the most part, most follicular lymphomas, regardless of their grade, except for one kind of exception, which I won't have time to get into, most follicular lymphomas are what we call indolent lymphomas. And so indolent lymphomas gradually, in many cases, get to a point that they cause symptoms and need treatment. They tend to respond very well to treatment, but they tend to relapse at some point down the line, usually years later. And so for many people, follicular lymphoma is something that is not easy to get rid of. It is something that people can expect to have to deal with on and off over many years, and again, hopefully many, many years for patients with indolent lymphoma. On the other hand, follicular lymphomas, while they respond to treatment, they're hard to get rid of. And so the good part is that they can be slow-growing. They, in many cases, don't cause any symptoms or any problems, at least until they get bigger. But on the other hand, so they tend to be, for many people, things that are not causing symptoms or causing problems and may actually not need any treatment initially. On the other hand, they're difficult to completely get rid of. So that's in contrast to some of the aggressive lymphomas, which tend to grow quickly, tend to need treatment, and on the other hand, can, in some cases, be cured with treatment, usually chemotherapy-based treatment, but in some cases can be quite resistant to treatment and be a big problem. And so all of the different types of lymphomas have pros and cons to them. So how we approach patients with follicular lymphoma, I tell patients that really every time you see me, you have two questions. The first question is, do you need to do anything right now about your lymphoma? The second question is, okay, what are we going to do about it if we need to do something? And so the first question, do we need to do anything about it, it relates to the fact that patients with indolent lymphomas and follicular lymphomas in particular can often do very well for a long period of time without treatment. And that relates to the idea that follicular lymphomas are hard to get rid of. If they're not bothering you, it turns out that there's very little evidence that if your goal is to live to be 90 or 100, that rushing to treat your follicular lymphoma, if it's not bothering you, if it's not large, the lymph nodes are not pushing on organs or causing any problems, that treating it right away versus treating it at some point in the future has the same long-term outlook. And so for many patients, the concept of watch and wait, some people term it watch and worry because it can be a worrisome period of time, patients can often go a period of time, often years, before they need any treatment if the lymphoma is slowly growing and not causing any problems. So that's question one, do you do any treatment right now or not when a patient is diagnosed? And that's defined by the symptoms, by the bulk of the disease, meaning how big the lymph nodes are they causing any problems, are they causing any laboratory abnormalities? And in patients that are observed without treatment, We are very careful in watching them over a period of time to see the pace of change in the lymph nodes, because that pace of change may define whether or not it's time to intervene and to do some treatment. So then the second question is, once a patient gets to the point where they've decided to do treatment, then there are a number of different options that one can pursue. About 10% of patients with indolent lymphomas, including follicular lymphomas, have a stage 1 lymphoma, or a limited stage lymphoma, where it's just in basically one local area of lymph nodes. Historically, many patients with stage 1 follicular lymphoma, when it was in just one area, at least could be found just in one area, were often treated with radiation. It turns out now that patients with stage 1 follicular lymphoma may not necessarily need radiation. They may or may not do better with radiation or not if it is localized disease. And so there still remains, and recent data says that patients with localized follicular lymphoma, where it's only in one area, can probably be treated in a number of different fashions, whether they're observed, whether they get radiation, or whether they get various different systemic treatments, whether that chemotherapy treatment or other treatment, or combinations of such, they can do quite well. So stage 1 localized follicular lymphoma, when patients are diagnosed, remains an area where there's a lot of debate, I would say, as to how to approach the disease. There are lots of different options, and the take-home message is that those patients tend to do very well and can probably be treated in various different ways and have a good outcome. Now, for most patients with follicular lymphoma, they have disease in multiple places, what we call advanced stage disease. Now, the stage of lymphoma, meaning is it spread, is it in multiple places, is less of an issue than it is in most other tumors. In most cancers, things like breast cancer, lung cancer, colon cancer, we're very focused on did it spread. And in lymphomas, that's less of an issue. Most people with follicular lymphoma and other lymphomas have lymph nodes in lots of different places of their body, lots of lymph node areas. Often they have bone marrow involvement. Bone marrow is the cavity inside the bones that's the factory for the blood. And so when patients with advanced stage, which is most patients, have reached a point where they're deciding now it's time to do some treatment based on a variety of the factors we've discussed, there are a number of different options. It used to be chemotherapy was the only option. There are a number of different oral and intravenous chemotherapy regimens. Some of the more commonly used regimens in the United States include a regimen called CHOP. Now we have another drug called bendamustine or Treanda. That's a chemotherapy drug that is more commonly now being used in the U.S. as well. We have a drug called rituximab is the generic name, is an antibody treatment. It's an immune protein that works with the immune system and flicks switches on the lymphoma cells so that they die off. And so right now, patients across the country and across the world who get treatment for indolent lymphoma typically get treated with chemotherapy plus rituximab, and again, that is typically R-CHOP, sometimes RCVP, which is a less intensive version of R-CHOP, sometimes now bendamustine and rituximab, but rituximab is generally part of the mix, or sometimes patients get treated with rituximab alone. And the bottom line is that the more drugs you add, the more side effects, but the longer the disease stays in remission. The fewer drugs, the less long the disease stays in remission or stays quiet, but the fewer side effects. And so the choice among these different regimens, some of which make you lose your hair, some of which don't, some of which affect your blood counts and may predispose to infection, some of which don't, is a very, very individualized decision with a patient and their physician to sort through, do you use something that's more aggressive or less aggressive based on the nature of the disease? So the good part is that there are lots and lots of new approaches in development where we are working to improve the efficacy of treatment, minimize the toxicity of treatment, and come up with new approaches that have the potential to make patients do better in the long term. And in a minute, Dr. Smith is going to give you some sense of the new options that are coming along that are starting in patients with relapse disease, but ultimately will be incorporated, and some already are still being incorporated, into our frontline therapies. So in the last 30 seconds of my my portion of this discussion, I just want to make a point about communicating with your healthcare team, because I tell patients that follicular lymphoma is not a dictatorship, it's a partnership. There are very few situations where there's one answer to and as to how to treat a patient with follicular lymphoma. There are pros and cons of different treatments, and you really have to ask questions of your physicians and your care team. You have to sort through, figure out what's important to you as far as the pros and cons of various treatments, because there are lots of options. There are many situations where option A and option B may have pros and cons to you personally, but are equal choices with respect to do you live 10, 20, 30, 40 years down the line. And so your preferences can be very important. And you need to talk about those issues with your care team. You also need to talk about clinical trials, which are important options for patients, with your care team, and work together to sort through this complicated group of diseases in order to figure out what's the best approach for you. So that, with that, I will stop and hand it over to Dr. Smith in just a minute, and look forward to further discussion later.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Leonard, for just a very informative and comprehensive presentation. And our next speaker is Dr. Sonali Smith, and Dr. Smith is Associate Professor, Section of Hematology Oncology, Director, Lymphoma Program, the University of Chicago. And Dr. Smith is going to address treatment options for relapsed refractory disease, clinical trials, and quality of life concerns. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Smith.
Thank you very much, Carolyn. I'd also like to extend my thanks to both Cancer Care and to the Lymphoma Research Foundation for putting this together today. So, as mentioned, my task is to cover a little bit about treatment options for when the disease comes back. As Dr. Leonard mentioned, this is follicular lymphoma is a disease that people can live with for a very long period of time and have to deal with from time to time. In the vast majority of situations, when the follicular lymphoma comes back, I actually like the way he phrased it, which is the very first question ends up being, really, do I need treatment? Many times this is a disease that can grow so slowly that even if it's beginning to creep back, treating sooner rather than later may not have long-term advantages, and I think this is a very critical question for patients to ask their physician. What is, you know, the indication for treatment when the disease comes back? What are the risks and benefits of, you know, immediate therapy versus delayed therapy? And one of the most important things I tell my patients is that, you know, as this is a partnership, this is something where we want to consider both the short-term and the long-term side effects for any individual patient. But when the disease does require treatments, there are a number of options that are available. And in general, the decision on the intensity of the therapy, the type of therapy, depends on really how much disease is there, and not just the stage, but, you know, how quickly the disease is growing and whether or not it's bulky and taking up a lot of space within the body or interfering with organ function, including the bone marrow, whether or not there are symptoms associated with it, which could include things like fatigue or some of the more classic symptoms associated with lymphomas, such as fevers that you cannot explain or night sweats or weight loss. And then also just what the patient would like to do at that time. So if the decision for treatment is made, we generally break the new groups of agents into, you know, both chemotherapy and non-chemotherapy options. And chemotherapy has been around for a long time, and it is very effective for follicular lymphoma. We typically use combinations of chemotherapy and almost always add in a monoclonal antibody such as rituximab, as this is shown to help the chemotherapy work better. The chemotherapy agent that has, I think, really helped in patients in terms of tolerability over the last 5 to 7 years is bendamustine or Treanda. And this is an agent that, even when follicular lymphoma has come back, is extremely active. And when it's combined with rituximab, can put patients back into remission so that any of their symptoms related to the follicular lymphoma can be taken care of and to help improve the quality of life. There are certainly other chemotherapy agents that are available. Sometimes you can go back to treatments that had been considered in the beginning, such as the R-CHOP combination or the RCVP combination, but this is definitely a decision to be made with the physician. I think what's really very exciting at this point is that there are a number of non-chemotherapy options that are considered for follicular lymphoma when it comes back. What we've learned over the last several decades is that B cells, and all cancers really, use certain pathways to take advantage of the body and to be able to grow. And the first generation of non-chemotherapy options for follicular lymphoma were immunotherapy, an immunotherapy approach, basically monoclonal antibodies, which are not chemotherapy, but they are anti-cancer agents, and they're what we like to consider targeted therapy. They are antibodies against a specific protein that lives on the surface of B cells. And at this point, there are a number of monoclonal antibodies that have really improved our ability to manage this disease for longer periods of time. Rituximab, which is a monoclonal antibody against CD20, is perhaps one of the more successful ones and ones that really been very helpful for our patients. And this is a monoclonal antibody against CD20. As we've mentioned, it's often combined with chemotherapy, but when this disease comes back, it can also be used on its own. And at this point, there is another generation of monoclonal antibodies. Some of them are against the same target, against CD20, and this includes compounds such as ofatumumab and GA101, which may have certain advantages over rituximab in how they work, and these are being tested at this point to see, you know, what their best use in follicular lymphoma might be. Another way that immunotherapy has been used is to link these monoclonal antibodies to a payload, and that payload can be something such as a small amount of radiation, or it could be another drug that is delivered to the follicular lymphoma cells. In terms of radioimmunotherapy, there are currently two molecules that are FDA approved. One of them is called Zevalin, and the other one is called Bexxar, and these are basically monoclonal antibodies against CD20 that then deliver a small amount of radiation. And knowing that radiation is a very effective tool for lymphomas, this is a very elegant way of delivering radiation to a very specific area. So that's kind of the first generation of non-chemotherapy options, is the immunotherapy. What's happened over the last maybe 5 to 7 years is there are two other categories. One is what we call immunomodulatory agents. And the drug that is perhaps the hallmark of this group of drugs is something called lenalidomide. This is a pill form of delivering a drug that has multiple effects not only on the cancer cell, but also on the cells around the cancer cell that sort of support that cancer cell to thrive. And lenalidomide may be able to disconnect the communication between the cancer and the supporting cells. And this drug, in particular, combined with rituximab, is a very promising area within follicular lymphoma, to the point where the combination of lenalidomide and rituximab is actually being pitted against chemotherapy to see if this has advantages over using what we consider nonspecific types of treatment like chemotherapy. And then the last category that I just want to mention is that we know that cancers use certain pathways to grow, and within follicular lymphoma, there is a pathway called B cell receptor signaling. And the B cell receptor is just the name of a, again, a protein that sits on the surface of B cells, both follicular lymphoma cells and normal B cells. In follicular lymphoma, this B cell receptor is always in the on position. And what that does is it sends multiple signals into the cell to continue to grow. And if we can block that signaling, perhaps we can help patients. And in fact, what's happened is that there are now a number of new agents. One of them is called ibrutinib, and the other one is called idelalisib, and there are many others, that block this B cell receptor signaling pathway. What's exciting about these drugs is that they are, again, in pill form, so, you know, having to avoid the IV and the lines, and also that the early studies suggest that they are going to be very well tolerated. Most of the side effects seem to be mild, and the drugs do seem to be very effective. So with those three non-chemotherapy categories that are in development, I really think that this is just an incredibly exciting time for follicular lymphoma, and that the options for patients where the disease has come back is quite broad. The challenge is that some of these drugs are not yet approved, and the only way for us to really be able to understand how best to use these drugs is to perform clinical trials that are well-designed and that help us answer the questions. Who's going to benefit from these drugs? How do we use them? How long do we use them? These are all very, very important questions that we can only answer with clinical trials. And I would just urge anyone who's in this situation where the disease has come back, you know, at this time in particular, there are so many important studies going on with some of these newer drugs that I think will, and I hope will, change, you know, the conversation we have with patients about 5 years from now. And then just before I stop, I just want to mention, because this does come up periodically, that often with follicular lymphoma, you know, the disease comes back a number of times, and at some point patients are asked or considered for a stem cell transplant. And although that's a complex topic, I will just say that right now there's several different kinds of stem cell transplants that can be done. Some of them are very effective in helping to treat follicular lymphoma, but it's a very small group of patients in general who are considered for a stem cell transplant. And I would be happy to answer any questions about that during the question and answer period. And then lastly, I'll just say that, you know, this is a disease that you'll have for a long time, and there are many quality of life concerns that come with having a diagnosis of follicular lymphoma. It is not just always disease-related, where we are concerned about the organs that may be affected, including the bone marrow, but it's also treatment-related, because our treatments can have both short-term and long-term side effects. And then there's also an emotional component of having a chronic disease that you know is very, very difficult to get rid of completely. And I think it's very important to stay connected to your family and friends, to join support groups, and to contact organizations such as Cancer Care and Lymphoma Research Foundation to have as much information as possible, so that it's easier to cope with some of the struggles that come along with having this diagnosis. So perhaps I'll stop there and let Carolyn take over.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Smith, for just a wonderful presentation and very informative, and I'm sure there will be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you. And our next speaker is Maxwell Mulcahy. And Ms. Mulcahy is the Associate Director of Programs, the Lymphoma Research Foundation, and he is going to provide you a review of the free support programs offered by the Lymphoma Research Foundation. And I want to say this is just a wonderful organization. If you haven't taken advantage of them, we recommend that you do. And I have to say that Maxwell Mulcahy and Brian Tomlinson with the Lymphoma Research Foundation have really been instrumental in making today's program possible. Mr. Mulcahy?
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining our teleconference today. I'd like to thank Cancer Care for putting this call together, and Dr. Carolyn Messner does a really wonderful job coordinating these seminars, so thank you so much to her. I also want to thank our speakers, Dr. John Leonard, who serves as the chair of our scientific advisory board, and Dr. Sonali Smith, who also serves on that board, and she is co-chairing our upcoming national lymphoma meeting, the North American Educational Forum on Lymphoma. And, of course, I want to thank our supporters for today's call, Genentech, Bio-Oncology, Biogen IDEC, and Spectrum Pharmaceuticals. So LRF is the nation's largest nonprofit organization devoted exclusively to lymphoma. Our mission is to eradicate lymphoma and serve those touched by the disease. And we accomplish this goal through our research program and the education programs and patient services we provide. We have funded over $54 million in lymphoma research since the inception of the organization, and nearly $10 million of that has been allocated specifically to follicular lymphoma research. Over 50,000 people access our programs and services each year, which means they're attending our in-person live meetings, our professional meetings. They're accessing these teleconference series, these downloading webcasts and podcasts, and they're also calling into our lymphoma helpline. So by calling into our lymphoma helpline, you can receive information about follicular lymphoma and treatment options. We can also provide for you a clinical trials information service, which is how you can find out how to enroll in a follicular lymphoma clinical trial and where the closest trial is located to you. And through our helpline, we have a lymphoma support network where we can match you with another follicular lymphoma patient, and you can offer each other support about navigating through your diagnosis. We also offer a financial assistance program, and that provides a one-time $150 grant that's meant to alleviate some of the transportation costs for getting to and from treatment. And this helpline service is staffed by trained professionals. It's available in any language. And for more information, you can contact a member of our helpline team by calling 800-500-9976 or emailing helpline@lymphoma.org, and you can also visit our website, which is lymphoma.org. We also offer a series of live education meetings, and we have regional workshops and seminars that are full-day programs with follicular lymphoma disease-specific sessions, and patients learn about the basic biology of follicular lymphoma, as well as current treatment options, novel therapies that are in development, and other support topics. And we also host, as I alluded to earlier, the North American Educational Forum on Lymphoma each year. And this is a national meeting that we hold, and it spans 2.5 days. And it features speaking faculty from the major academic centers across the United States. And much like at the workshops, we offer follicular lymphoma-specific sessions, as well as sessions that provide patient and caregiver support. And the Ed Forum is going to take place later this year, September 27th to the 29th, in Brooklyn, New York. And you can go to the specific URL, which is lymphoma.org/EdForum. So for those who can't attend one of our live meetings, we also offer a variety of webcasts available on our website. And these webcasts are a synchronization of the slides and audio from our live meetings. So it's like being in a session right at your home. We also offer a variety of publications and newsletters, including a non-Hodgkin lymphoma comprehensive disease guide, fact sheets on follicular lymphoma and relapse refractory follicular lymphoma, and our follicular lymphoma specific website, which is focusonfl.org. We also offer a follicular specific e-news, and all of these resources offer the most up-to-date information about follicular lymphoma and treatment options. So you can learn more about all of these education opportunities, everything from our live meetings, webcasts, and publications by clicking on the Learn tab when you visit our website, which is lymphoma.org. LRF is committed to educating and supporting the lymphoma community, so I encourage you to utilize all of these valuable resources that LRF provides. So thank you very much, and I'm happy to answer questions during that segment of the call.
Oh, thanks very much, Max, for just a wonderful presentation. Thank you. And our next presenter is Maria Chi, and Maria is an oncology social worker and clinical supervisor at Cancer Care, and Maria is going to review the free psychosocial services offered by Cancer Care. Maria?
Thanks, Carolyn. As an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care, I'd like to talk about the emotional and social impact of lymphoma and how Cancer Care can help. When you're first diagnosed with lymphoma, it can be an overwhelming experience. You're faced with a series of choices and may not know where to turn. Talking to a Cancer Care social worker can help you get the support you need. Cancer Care is a staff of licensed, master's-level social workers, and all of our services are completely free of charge. We're experienced in helping people manage the emotional, physical, and financial challenges that come with a diagnosis. One of the most important things to acknowledge about the emotional impact of lymphoma is that it can be felt as a loss. It can be a loss that manifests itself in many ways for both patients and caregivers. That's why it's so important to have an outlet to acknowledge how you're feeling and to have someone to talk to who will be supportive and understanding. This can mean talking one-on-one with a Cancer Care social worker or joining one of our support groups. Cancer Care offers face-to-face groups in our local offices in the New York area, as well as telephone and online groups. These groups offer an opportunity to talk with other people impacted by lymphoma, along with the help of a Cancer Care social worker to facilitate the group. Participating in a support group can be helpful simply by allowing you to talk with others who are in a similar situation and who truly understand in a way that no one else can. Group members offer encouragement and a real sense of community that can provide you with additional support and guidance. Lastly, lymphoma can have a significant impact on your finances, and for many of the people I talk to every day, this can be an overwhelming aspect of cancer. Cancer Care provides limited financial assistance to help with transportation, home care, child care, or pain medication. While we can't resolve all the problems you're facing every day, a cancer care social worker provides a listening ear and the ability to counsel you as you navigate the lymphoma experience. Many people living with cancer find this to be a reassuring and comforting service that can help you feel you're not alone. So please contact us at 1-800-813-4673 or log on to our website at cancercare.org for more information about our oncology social work support.
Oh, thank you very much, Maria, for just a very wonderful presentation about the service of cancer care. And I hope that all of you understand that you can access these services, both the Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care. These services are free. There's an 800 number and website that you can go to, and do take advantage of those services. And now we have time for questions. We have a lot of time for questions. I'm going to ask Kate to bring all of our speakers on board, and if you could explain to people how to queue up for questions, and we'll try to take as many of your questions as possible. And if we don't get to your question before the end of the program, I'll give you a number to call, either the Lymphoma Research Foundation number, the 1-800-500-9976, or the Cancer Care number, 1-800-813-4673. And I'll repeat those numbers again at the end of the call. Okay, Kate?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit a question by clicking ask a question. Our first question comes from the line of Ann F. Your line is open.
Hi, this is a question for Dr. Leonard, please. It's a question about watchful waiting. And how long that generally lasts. If you had a patient that was asymptomatic, no organ function problem, low volume disease in five areas of the body and relatively young, late 40s, could you give us a range of how many years that person might expect to remain in watchful waiting?
Thank you for that question. And Dr. Leonard will address it in a general way, and then we'll advise you to go, of course, back to your treating healthcare team to discuss it further. Dr. Leonard?
So it's a great question and an important one for patients, because obviously, you know, being able to watch and wait for just a couple of months, you know, may be valuable but may not be valuable. You might just want to kind of get on with it if you're going to get treatment soon anyway. I think that's at least how I would look at it. The impetus to take someone or to be someone who's been on watch and wait and now switch over and say, okay, now we've reached a point that we're going to do treatment, is a very gray area. And I'm sure that there are patients that I could look at and Dr. Smith could look at, and one of us might say, let's wait a little longer, and the other might say, let's go ahead and start treatment right now, because it's really not a very well-defined point for many people. And in fact, the preferences of the individual matter as well, because some people might want to stall, so to speak, and others might want to get on with things, and that's obviously going to influence things. So it is not a very precise thing, because the criteria for suddenly starting to treat, while I'm sure there are many patients that any physician would agree and the patients would agree that it's time to do something, there are many patients where it's kind of a gray area. And I'm spending time explaining this because this issue comes up not only at diagnosis but at relapse for patients with follicular lymphoma, often many times over many years. So it does come up often. Now, that being said, the studies that have looked at watch and wait and observation, generally speaking, patients have watched and waited in those studies for somewhere in the range of 2.5-3 years. So these are patients that decide that they're not going to get initial treatment, that they're going to wait, and those patients, on average, go for several years. Now, I can tell you there are some patients who come back in 3 months and it's time to do treatment because the disease has kind of declared itself, or the patient has. And on the flip side, I have patients that have gone 10 years without needing any treatment and are still watching and may go significantly longer than that. So it's a very highly variable thing as to how that plays out.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from the line of Rafael S. Your line is open.
Yes, my questions are regarding transformation. First, is R-CHOP still the current standard of care for transformation? Second, does bendamustine help in that situation? And third, are there any promising alternatives to R-CHOP if that is the standard of care?
Dr. Smith, would you like to address that question?
Sure, absolutely. So that's another really important and great question, and one that we did not address in the overview. But just so everyone else on the line understands what transformation means, Dr. Leonard had mentioned that we group lymphomas into sort of indolent categories and aggressive categories, and that's based on the behavior. So follicular lymphoma is an indolent lymphoma, but about 3% per year of patients will have their indolent follicular lymphoma transform into a more aggressive lymphoma. And when that happens, the expected behavior changes in that the lymphoma tends to grow more quickly and generally causes more symptoms. And when transformation occurs for the vast majority of patients, watch and wait is no longer an option and treatment needs to be put in. And in this situation, a combination of five drugs nicknamed R-CHOP for rituximab, cyclophosphamide, adriamycin, vincristine, and prednisone, this combination of five drugs is used and has shown to be extremely effective in treating the transformed lymphoma and putting patients back into remission. Oftentimes, what will happen is that it is so good at putting the fast-growing part into remission that that part never really comes back, but we still have the original follicular lymphoma that we end up watching. The question really was not just about transformation, but how to treat it. And what I would say is that right now, this is actually a very tough part of the disease to study because people transform in different ways and at different points in their overall management. And what that means is that it's very hard to have clinical trials just for transformed lymphoma. And a lot of what we know about treating this disease comes from sort of going back and looking at how people have been treated and how things work. We know that with R-CHOP, this is extremely effective and this is the standard of care. Bendamustine has not been tested specifically for transformed lymphoma, but what I can tell you is that it has been tested in a related lymphoma, which is diffuse large B-cell lymphoma that doesn't come from follicular but just comes on its own. And in that situation, bendamustine and rituximab is active in that it can put the disease into remission, but it doesn't seem to last as long. And certainly, although it's not a head-to-head comparison of R-CHOP and bendamustine rituximab for transformed lymphoma, I think the standard of care really does remain R-CHOP. The last part of the question was whether or not there were new approaches, you know, outside of R-CHOP being looked at for this disease. And, you know, I do think that some of the newer drugs, such as ibrutinib and particularly ibrutinib, but also maybe radioimmunotherapy could be considered for patients where R-CHOP is not an option, but this is not anywhere close to replacing R-CHOP at this time.
Excellent. Thank you very much. We have a question from one of our online participants, from Gail, but her husband was diagnosed with follicular lymphoma about 18 months ago, had a needle biopsy, and it was suggested CD20 follicular lymphoma, but was not completely conclusive. And her question was, should they have a bone marrow biopsy, is the question. In terms of, so I guess this has to do with the diagnostic workup, and Dr. Leonard, could you perhaps just address this in a general way about the diagnostic workup for follicular lymphoma?
So generally speaking, lymphoma is diagnosed through the biopsy of a lymph node. Sometimes it can be from the bone marrow, again, the factory inside the bone, factory for the blood that's inside the bone, but most of the time it's a biopsy of a lymph node or an area of tissue that is an area of lymph tissue. Sometimes that can occur as a mass or a lump in the lung or in the gastrointestinal tract or in the liver, but most of the time it's a biopsy of a lymph node. Now, there are several ways to do this. One is through an open surgical procedure where the surgeon makes an incision and removes either the entire lymph node or a piece of the lymph node. That is usually the best way to make a diagnosis of lymphoma. Sometimes that's called an excisional biopsy, typically. Sometimes what's called a core needle biopsy, where a larger needle is placed inside the lump and a piece of tissue is removed, that sometimes can make the diagnosis. On occasion, there are procedures performed that are called fine needle aspirates, where a very tiny needle is inserted into the lymph node. Typically, that is not sufficient to make the diagnosis. The pathologists need to do a number of very sophisticated tests to classify the lymphoma, to confirm what type of lymphoma it is, and in fact, that it is lymphoma. And so the more they have to work with, the better. And so typically we prefer to have more tissue, a bigger piece of tissue, typically not what's called a fine needle aspirate, typically either an excisional biopsy where a surgical procedure is done to remove the tissue or a large needle core biopsy is performed. At the end of the day, it comes down to the pathologist looking at the tissue and saying, yes, this is adequate, we see enough here to make the diagnosis and do all the tests we need, or no, we don't. And so typically if the piece of tissue is not so big, then they let us know and we either ourselves or have a surgeon or a radiologist go in and take a bigger piece, because that is really an essential part of lymphoma, to get enough tissue to do all the tests to say exactly what type of lymphoma it is so you can establish the prognosis and choose the best therapy.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Excellent. I hope that helps. Okay, thank you. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from the line of Mark B. Your line is open.
A question for ongoing monitoring. I'm a male, 45 years old, diagnosed 7 years ago, been in remission for about 7 years with, did R-CHOP and the stem cell treatment, and then 2 years of maintenance Rituxan. Annually, I've been getting a PET CT scan. Now insurance companies are saying they're not going to pay for them, but they'll pay for a regular CAT scan. How important is the PET CT versus the CT for monitoring when this stuff starts back up again?
Oh, Mark, that's an excellent question, and I'm going to ask Dr. Smith if he would address that.
Sure, absolutely. And Mark, you hit on probably one of the most common questions that comes up, which is, you know, when you do a watch and wait strategy or surveillance after treatment, the question is, how do you do the surveillance and how often do you expose patients to, you know, either CT scans or PET scans? And then just so the audience understands, the difference between a CT scan and a PET scan is that a CT scan, they both use low doses of radiation to take pictures within the body. The CT scan gives us an idea of structural abnormalities. In other words, there's a lymph node there. We can measure it. We can see how big it is and whether or not it's affecting any of the organs. And in contrast, a PET scan gives you more information about how active that abnormality might be and will light up, you know, on the pictures that you take. What's happened over the last few years is that the role of PET scans has really been addressed in a number of different review articles and consensus statements. And the challenge with the PET scan is that oftentimes it will be a false positive. So a PET scan will light up not just where there is lymphoma, but where there might be other inflammatory conditions, such as sarcoid or an infection. And because it is not as specific and often leads to false positives, the consensus right now for follicular lymphoma is that PET scans are not used to follow a person's disease. And rather, it is more of a clinical surveillance, in other words, how a person looks, how they feel, how their exam is, and how their blood work is. And if needed, CT scans can be done to check on the status of lymph nodes, but even the number of CT scans is being questioned, you know, by many of the panels, because, you know, really in the absence of any symptoms or abnormalities with the blood, CT scans do not often pick up abnormalities that need action. And so the downside of doing all the CT scans is just that there is excess radiation exposure. And again, when we expect our patients to, you know, live for a very long period of time, we want to be careful in how we use the CT scans and not overexpose them to tests that may not change the management. So I think, you know, part of what the insurance companies are doing right now is that they're looking at some of these consensus panels and saying, you know, if there is so much false positive and adding a PET to a CT scan increases the risk of false positives, they will only pay for the routine CT scans.
Thank you. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from the line of Marsha R. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you for a great presentation. And my question is there any chance with one of the lucky cases, I know it was cited that 10% of cases are found at stage one, if a person achieved a very quick positive response and has been in remission for 8 years, is it likely that the disease or possible that the disease could be cured, or is that wishful thinking?
Thank you for that question. Dr. Leonard, would you address this question?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it turns into a philosophical question. And, you know, some people on the line may say, well, you know, I'm unhappy that I have this follicular lymphoma that is challenging to cure, but on the other hand, you know, at the end of the day, you know, patients can live a long time. Many patients can live a relatively normal life, even if they need treatment over the course of many years. When you look specifically, so in other words, you know, something else may come along. A person with follicular lymphoma who's been in remission, whether it was stage one or stage four, a person who's been in remission, which can happen for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, when you start to ask yourself, you know, am I cured? On the one hand, you know, the books would say this is a very difficult situation to cure, although maybe it's curable in some situations. On the other hand, it is something that, you know, over the course of 20 years and being in remission for lymphoma, something else may come along and affect you. Some other medical problem can affect people, even with diseases that are more traditionally curable, you know, one way or another. So it is very difficult to answer that question in the case of follicular lymphoma, whether it's localized or not. In many types of cancer, including some of the more aggressive lymphomas, we tend to think that, gee, if it hasn't come back in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, that, you know, by and large, it's probably not going to come back, and you can more or less consider yourself cured. With follicular lymphoma, it's not so much that we know it's either curable or not curable. It's more that it can come back 10 years later, 15 years later, 20 years later. And so, you know, I have seen patients with follicular lymphoma that went many, many years, and you could say that's a lucky situation. On the other hand, it can come back much later, or patients who are cured of one cancer can get other medical issues that come up years later as well. So to some degree, it's kind of a semantic argument that I try not to get too caught up in. What we do know about the limited stage follicular lymphomas are that patients who are treated, who go a long period of time, seem to do well. And whether or not they are ultimately cured depends on many different factors, and is a very, very difficult thing to prove one way or another, because these lymphomas can come back later. So I tend to look at it as, you know, let's focus on if you're in remission and you're doing well, it's hard to know what the future will hold. But for many patients who are doing well, who have been in remission, whether they had limited stage follicular lymphoma or advanced stage follicular lymphoma, you know, enjoy the remission and, you know, be hopeful. Recognize that it can come back even many years later, but be hopeful and enjoy a good quality of life and enjoy time being without the disease, and hopefully it'll last a very good long time.
Excellent. Thank you. And Maria, do you want to comment on just sometimes the participation in the support group or just individual support in these issues at these times?
Sure. I think support groups are extremely helpful in just helping someone manage that sense of waiting or uncertainty or that crisis point that may occur with if the disease does come back. You know, certainly that sense of that this is a community of people who understand all of those feelings and the complexity of that and what you're going through and may have definitely experienced something similar. It can really reduce that sense of isolation as you're going through that. So support groups are really immensely helpful for that.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks. And there is a question online for Dr. Smith. Please describe in more detail a good candidate for stem cell transplant, both allogeneic and autologous. How does the previous number of relapses treatments affect the effectiveness of ASCT?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And as I was saying earlier, it's kind of a complicated topic to discuss, but there are different types of stem cell transplants. Autologous and allogeneic are the two big categories. And the main difference is that in an autologous stem cell transplant, the patient serves as their own donor, and we're really relying on high doses of chemotherapy to get rid of the lymphoma. And in contrast, the allogeneic stem cell transplant relies on an alternative donor who not only helps the patient be rescued from the effects of the chemotherapy, but can give them a new immune system that should be able to eliminate follicular lymphoma and actually is one of the rare cases where we can consider cure as an outcome for follicular lymphoma. The role of stem cell transplant and the timing of it is very important. It works best when people are in a complete remission, and it's true that if you've had more than two or three lines of treatment, the stem cell transplant is less likely to work. And I really feel like this is a topic that has to be discussed on an individual basis because there are just so many variables. And with some of the newer agents that are coming out, I think there's a question of whether or not autologous stem cell transplant in particular still has an important role in this disease.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank all of our speakers today. You've really been extraordinary. And I want to thank actually all of those who've queued up and asked questions both online and on the telephone for really really enhancing the program today really by your questions. So that's really been extremely helpful as well. Now, I do want to say that as we're about to conclude the program, I don't want anyone to feel that if you didn't get to ask your question, you are thinking, like, now what am I supposed to do? And so I'm going to give you some options here to call either the Lymphoma Research Foundation, and their telephone number is 1-800-500-9976, or you may call Cancer Care at 1-800-813-4673, and our staff will be happy to help you with your questions and concerns. Most importantly, as we conclude the program today, we don't want anyone to feel that you're alone in coping with follicular lymphoma, with cancer, with lymphoma in general. We want you to know that you are part of this community of support and that these organizations are here to help you. And we all offer a variety of services, from help with talking to an oncology social worker, with programs and conferences and workshops that are available to all of you, with financial and practical assistance, with booklets and materials and fact sheets, with active websites with lots of information on them, so that there are a lot of resources for you as this program concludes. So I want to thank you for your participation today. Please take advantage of all of these free services, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may disconnect. Have a wonderful day.